Nothing is quite as frightening as the unknown. Anything can be waiting in the dark. Monsters, murderers, ghosts or ghouls. What manner of creature floats below the surface of murky waters or hides behind bright eyes and charming smiles? Children fear monsters lurking in the dark corners of their bedrooms, in closets and beneath beds, in the shadows of the basement. We were all afraid of the night. Some of us still are. But it's not merely the thought of other things biding their time, claws reaching to snatch at ankles and arms. It's not just the dark that frightens us. It's the thought of isolation. Published in 1847, a popular novel begins with the young protagonist being locked away in a room of her aunt's home. The space is decorated all in red, from walls to bedding to curtains. The room has long since been vacated, only opened to accommodate too many guests or to punish little girls. Though well kept, the air is thick with apprehension and the final breath of the young girl's uncle. You see, he died in that bed. His body reposed there until burial. While the sun is up, it's just a room, albeit creepy. But when the sun sinks and the moon casts its light across the red walls and through the gauzy curtains, the feeling of isolation becomes entrapment. Our girl is alone, but she isn't. Ghosts form in once shapeless shadows, and strange lights play out across the ceiling. Is it just the overactive imagination of a child? Or is there something to truly be afraid of? Jane Eyre, written by Charlotte Bronte under the name Currer Bell, is filled with horrifying moments, fueled by dread and never quite knowing. Jane becomes so terrified envisioning the restless spirits come to punish her that she cries out for freedom. When the maid and her aunt answer to find Jane unharmed, she's tossed back into the Red Room for an extended punishment. Unable to shake the horrifying thought of returning ghosts, Jane collapses. Later in the novel, Jane claims her childhood fears silly, but I doubt she truly feels that way, especially when she begins hearing strange sounds from above her chambers in Thornfield Hall. If Jane's isolation terrified her into unconsciousness as a child, imagine what horrors befell the madwoman in the attic. Welcome to Courting Casualties. I'm Megan Harker. When I was little, I was afraid of the dark. I was convinced something lived in my basement, and if I didn't run up the stairs fast enough, I would discover what it was. Thanks to a friend, I became obsessed with closed doors. My closet had to be shut completely, as did my bedroom door. Whatever I feared couldn't get me, couldn't find me, if the doors were shut. I'm not sure if I believed it couldn't open them or I'd be given a timely warning. Maybe it was just really lazy. Whatever scared us as children may still have the power to scare us as adults. Spiders, clowns, open doors leading to dark hallways. The dark plays tricks on us. Deprived of our full sense of sight, we begin to hallucinate. When we expect to be frightened, we are. Stare into any mirror long enough, and you'll swear you'll see something moving. Something wrong. Our brains are designed to interpret and identify human faces, and you'll find them if you're looking. Shadows and reflections in glass can appear to be ghostly images staring back at you. And when you find yourself unable to decipher fact from fiction, you become afraid. Fear is an emotional response echoed in our bodies. It makes our heart beat faster, dilates the blood vessels, halts your breathing. It doesn't matter if the threat is real or imagined, the reaction is the same. It's more than seeing a spider or hearing footsteps in the hall. Inanimate objects also cause distress. Like dolls. Tiny, human-shaped figures made of porcelain, with curled hair and petite dresses. But eyes too large for its face. out of proportion. Wrong, but almost indiscernible, the offness puts us on edge even when there is no obvious threat. Like looking at a teddy bear and discovering it has a full set of human teeth. We are not in danger. It's an inanimate object. It can't cause us any harm, so why are we afraid? Occasionally, some of us even enjoy being terrified, but usually when we can control the administration and the dosage. Even those of us who welcome fear become unnerved when driving down roads in the middle of the night. Who are we when we're alone? Do we become something else too? Left isolated, we create our own monsters, become them. Not all monsters are born of fear. Some are created from it. As with poor Jane, trapped in the Red Room, isolation can do disastrous things to the human mind. The Yellow Wallpaper by Charlotte Perkins Gilman is a tale of a woman unraveled by the Rest Cure. The Rest Cure, as prescribed by one Silas Weir Mitchell, instructed the afflicted woman to remain in bed, to not exert herself by motion or thought. To me, it sounds like a vacation, until you realize his list of overwhelming activities included reading, thinking, knitting, sewing, or movement of any variety. The Rest Cure, in essence, was to lie in bed and be silent and still until they told you to stop. Which might be never. Sounds too horrible not to be fiction, right? While the circumstances in The Yellow Wallpaper are make-believe, The Rest Cure is, unfortunately, very real. Gilman was made to endure it, as were countless other women. For 3 months, she was forbidden to touch pen, pencil, or brush. 2 hours a day were allotted for mental activity. Realizing how close to destruction she was, Gilman tossed The Rest Cure out the window. In fact, she gave Weir Mitchell a copy of The Yellow Wallpaper. And despite claims that he quit his practice, Weir Mitchell aimed to open a hospital where his Rest Cure could aid a larger section of the female population. If nothing else, avoid rooms with hideous wallpaper. Whether you're trapped in a bedroom, a castle, a cottage, a prison, or a box beneath the earth, everything is a jail cell, usually in a place that isn't home, isn't well-known or well-explored. The things in the dark are the things unknown, foreign, frightening. If you're lucky enough not to be imprisoned by walls, perhaps the past will return to disrupt your life. When times merge, it delivers a very out-of-place shock, bringing with it demands, pleas, or revenge. Ghosts and technology often go hand in hand for this reason. It's a brink between worlds and eras, the past meeting the future. Bram Stoker's Dracula pits Jonathan Harker against a vampire in a world freshly modernized with typewriters and other conveniences. It's unsettling to find yourself hunted by the supernatural in a world with electric lighting and industrialization. No matter how far we come, technology and machinery can't protect you from inhuman assailants. Of course, it's not Jonathan, but Mina, who has to defeat Dracula. Unlike Lucy, ill-fated and ultimately killed, Mina gets the rare treat of being able to defend herself. If you haven't read Dracula, consider this your spoiler warning. Though bitten and assured fate as a vampire after death should Dracula not be defeated, Mina uses her connection to the Master to help her allies track him down. Mina, you see, is clever and resourceful. She's, dare I say it, powerful. Without her, Dracula would have won. But terror isn't always enough. It's not enough to give power to the things in the dark. They're also masters of seduction, breaking all the normal societal taboos and luring victims with the promise of things more enticing. The question is, do you fear the monster? Or do you fear what it offers? We're drawn to them. We can't help it. And perhaps that's the most horrifying thing of all. Deep down, in the darkest parts of ourselves, we want it. Of course, no one said fear had to be rational. No one said terror and horror were the same. Psychologically speaking, terror is the feeling that precedes an experience, where horror is the sickening that follows. Gothic pioneer Anne Radcliffe said, "Terror expands the soul and awakens the faculties to a high degree of life, where horror freezes and nearly annihilates them with displays of atrocity." Terror is more enlightening. It thrills and inspires emotions that could be morally uplifting. You become more aware, more self-aware. Horror is too explicit. Here is the difference between suggesting the Lord of the Manor is a murderer and his displaying the severed limbs in his foyer. Of course, there's a third response. And nothing is so great as revulsion. Revulsion is what I feel when I think about or see rotten teeth crumbling from a mouth, or when others see holes in objects that shouldn't be there. A deep, dark sickness that's purely visceral makes your skin crawl, a product of your traitorous brain, but something all too tangible. A world of terror is a world of doubt. After all, how could ghosts exist in the modern world? Surely science would have disproven hauntings, dispelled the creatures in the dark. In the Gothic, there is a divide. The school of the supernatural having a normal, reasonable source, and the school of, good heavens, is that Satan himself? The 18th century saw the waning of Orthodox religion in favor of exploring the supernatural. You see, they wanted to believe in an afterlife. They sought comfort, something more profound. Promises that their loved ones were all right. When you see post-mortem images, photos of the dead, these portraits weren't taken to be horrific. They were taken to be cherished. These images were one of the few things that people could keep as a token other than locks of hair. Spirit photography, hoax or truth, provided relief to those left behind. Is it a crime to provide solace? Actually, yes. Yes, it is, because a number of these spirit photographers used pain and suffering to make a ton of cash. But that isn't the point. I believe, intrinsically, we are all afraid of ghosts. It links us back to the fear of death and the unknown. The idea that something unseen is watching you is unsettling at best. It's far easier to blame the suspected supernatural than to hunt down the real monsters. Our modern existence is not so far removed from the Gothic as we might be willing to admit. We willfully ignore what scares us, burying it under superstition and the mask of modern thinking. Fear is primal. You can still tap into the things that send goosebumps down your arms, the chill along your spine. Modern horror writers reach down into that pit of terror and unearth the things you were afraid of as a child. And the scary things have an awful tendency to linger. Monsters will never grow old because all of us have something to fear. Zombies stand in for economical epidemics. Vampires for illness and disease, werewolves for fear of self, ghosts our fear of death and what comes after, if there is an after. I believe the things in the dark are closer than we expect. I believe in monsters. I believe in ghosts. I've spoken to one, twice, in a cemetery at night. I used dowsing rods in a game of yes and no. I felt the icy cold presence against my skin when he moved to my side, a cold spot that followed me on a balmy spring night because I asked it to. A ghost who remembered me when I returned. Could it have been psychological? My will making something impossible happen? Perhaps. But I know what I felt. The energy crossing the rods and moving them apart in response to my questions. It could have been an ideomotor response. A subtle mental charge that results in unconscious physical motion. Like seeing the planchette on a Ouija board move, but swearing you didn't do it. Or maybe my ghost simply likes pretty girls, asking if he knows how to waltz in cemeteries at night. When it comes down to it, we like being scared because we like tasting our mortality. We cope with what we are powerless to change or prevent, and part of that response is being afraid. Being frightened somehow makes the world less frightening. Courting Casualties is a monthly podcast produced by me, Megan Harker. Since I was little, I've been obsessed with monsters, and that remains true today. I specialize in Victoriana and am currently working on my own gothic horror novel. In the modern world, I am a horror writer for girlsincapes.com, where I talk about horror in books, television, and film. I also write for criminalelement.com, where I talk about American Horror Story and Hemlock Grove. You can find me on Twitter at exquisitelyodd, or on my website, exquisitelyodd.com. I am also on Instagram at Megan_Harker, where I post in progress and completed artwork. Just in case you were curious, I draw monsters too. The music in this episode is Gone Beyond, composed by Kevin MacLeod and used under the Creative Commons license. If you enjoyed this show, please consider subscribing. Reviews are also appreciated. Thank you for listening, and as always, stay strange.